huge news, years in the making, my brand new book that my publishers refuse to publish, Money Matrix. Beat the money system and build generational wealth. Understand the three main ways that the banks productize you and make money from you. You'll be able to turn that system against itself, build generational wealth and multiple streams of recurring income. It's all at moneymatrix.cash. And if you're quick, the first few hundred registrants and buyers will receive many special bonuses from me. The brand new Moneymaker Summit 3-day special event. Meet me at a champagne reception. Meet me at a multi-millionaire networking dinner. Go now, moneymatrix.cash. This is huge. Confronting Andrew and Tristan Tate. I've had some criticism for interviewing Andrew and Tristan Tate. I've also had thousands of positive messages, but I wanted to address confronting Andrew and Tristan Tate and let you know that I don't let Andrew and Tristan Tate off the hook. I didn't just suck up to them, even though I believe they've got good experience in business and social media. In this episode, I go where most interviewers are not prepared to go, and I challenge and confront Andrew and Tristan Tate directly on some of the most controversial things they have said and done. If you're looking for soft, fluffy fanboy stuff, this is not the content for you. I shouldn't have to disclaim that I'm an interviewer, and therefore the views of Andrew and Tristan Tate are not necessarily my own. I've interviewed hundreds of people, many controversial, because this show is called Disruptors, not Conformists. So anyone who wants to see Andrew and Tristan sweat a little bit, or to see me challenge and confront them, this is the episode for you. I hate long intros, let's get straight into this.
If I have a woman who I truly care about, I have to look her and say, I want to protect you in all realms, from everything and everyone, including a police interview.
Have you ever shown any weakness to a woman? Vulnerability? I've cried in front of a woman.
No, I don't cry in general. But yeah, there certainly women I've been with for a long time know what bothers me. Absolutely.
And you're okay with that?
Well, completely. But I'm saying that I'm not going to put her in a position where she needs to rely on her quick wit against a federal agency or her quick wit against anybody else. I think that would be irresponsible for me as a man. Why would I do that? I think the most responsible thing I can do is to have my woman live a princess life and be taken care of and for us to be in love. And if she ever ends up under pressure, she defaults to the truth. Because people say women are fantastic liars. I'd argue the opposite. I think women are terrible liars. No woman's ever managed to lie to me. It takes 3 seconds to tear their lies apart. 3 seconds. So women can't lie. So just sit there and tell the truth. And the truth is, I don't know. 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 And they just, I don't know their way through it. That's me being proof. That's me being responsible. For the same reason I won't let my toddler put her finger in a plug socket, I'm not going to tell a woman where I do my banking. She doesn't need to know. And if she, for some reason, finds that detrimental to our connection, then I guess she's going to have to go find another famous billionaire, isn't she? But she'll probably struggle, because there's not many of us. So she's going to have to just deal with it.
Are you really a billionaire, though? Like, really?
Yes. I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because...
Because I think you've turned over billions, but I don't think you've got a net worth of a billion.
Well, how do you calculate net worth? Net worth is semi-subjective, would you agree?
Assets minus liabilities.
Okay, so we have assets minus liabilities, but then let's say your assets are companies, or let's say your assets are a brand, then it becomes subjective.
Yeah, well it becomes what someone will pay for it at the time if you sell it.
Okay.
Which isn't subjective in the moment.
Oh, well, that's right, but I've never tried to sell my companies, but then...
But a lot of people go, oh, my company's worth a billion. It's actually worth fuck all.
Correct. You're completely right. So this is why I'm talking about how it's subjective. So then what you can do is you can go online and you can look at previously sold.
Or multipliers.
That's right. So let's say I had a tech company. Let's say I had an online educational platform that turned over $150 million a year at 80% profit. Let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say.
In the real world, let's say you did that.
Let's say I had that.
Yeah.
Right? And then you would say, well, the standardized tech multiplier is 6 or 7. Especially with a margin like that. Well, that's a $1 billion company.
But it's not a personal $1 billion net worth.
Well, it's a $1 billion company that's owned by me.
Tristan has no share in it?
Shares. Just thinking inside the matrix.
Shares.
Shares, schmares. No one owns it on paper. It just exists. It's just there. If I sold everything I own for the fair price, I would have a lot more than $1 billion. So if you want to talk about hard assets like real estate, cars, land.
Let's do that. Let's do that then. How much real estate have you got?
The matrix is after after me. They took everything from me. Decot took it all.
You said to me everything. You told me to come to Romania and bring everything.
But Decot took everything, of course. But I actually worked this. It's funny you asked me this question. Because my brother and I worked this out only a week and a half ago. We were like, if you know what you have, you ain't got much. What do we have?
But surely you track your net worth every year.
No.
Why not?
Because if I want something.
You cannot master what you do not measure.
If I want something, I just buy it. If I want a $5.4 million Pagani to go with a Pagani penthouse that costs $29 million, then I just buy both. I just buy them. Buy that. I just send a message to the important, to the competent authority. Purchase. And it's done. I have hundreds of millions of dollars of real estate.
Right.
But I'm not going to say where it is.
I didn't ask you that, though.
Okay, good. Yeah.
I wouldn't ask you
that. I have hundreds of millions of dollars of real estate. Well, no, sorry. Let me rephrase that. There is a company owned by a company, owned by a trust fund, owned by a company that has hundreds of millions of dollars of real estate, which I have access to.
Okay. And how many cars do you currently have?
59. I think I bought another one yesterday.
What was that?
It was only a Huracan Technica, but it was the last one off of the production line.
Yeah.
So I thought I'll buy it.
So what's the 59 cars worth?
Well, let's try and work this out. I have a Rimac Nevera.
Is that on order?
Not finished. Just needs collecting, but
yeah.
I'm on judicial control. I cannot leave Romania. That's around 5 million. I have the Bugatti around 5 million. I have two Jimeras ordered. They were 5 million each. I got Jesco. That's 5 million. So that's five cars. We're already at 30 million.
Why two Jimeras?
Because I spec'd it and I couldn't decide which color.
Right.
It was between the two.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I'm not a brokey. Let's pop it.
Right. What's the Koenigsegg process of buying? It must be a pain in the ass. Like,
I guess it.
Wait list, all that.
For the average man, perhaps, yeah. When you're Andrew Tate. When you look at what I've done for the Bugatti brand, think about it.
Do they like you?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they don't like me in traffic or whatever. But I guarantee the word Bugatti has been said more in the last 2 years than it was ever said in its entire history.
Yeah.
If I say to Koenigsegg, I want Jimeras, they're like, yes, sir.
So they like you?
I think so.
Yeah. Are there any car brands that won't sell to you?
No, of course not.
Are there any watch brands that won't sell to you? Of course
not. Everyone loves me, Rob. This is a psyop. There's a psyop that I'm some disliked person. Every single person likes me all of the time. I've yet to have a negative interaction.
There must be one pissed off girlfriend, ex-girlfriend that doesn't like you.
Well, no one
is liked by everyone.
I'm sure Decot tried very hard to find her.
You know, you're converting to Islam.
Yeah.
Was that kind of like a PR stunt?
Absolutely not. I think that it is the last religion on earth. If you believe in God, you're a Muslim. What's a Christian?
Well, what's a Muslim? What's any other religious belief?
If you do not have strong parameters because of your religious belief, then you're not religious. And Christians no longer have strong parameters. Everyone says they're a Christian. Nobody acts like a Christian. I don't respect it anymore. And that's why I had to revert to Islam. I was raised in a Christian household. My family's actually extremely religious. I live in a very Christian nation. But I don't see Christianity. This is the most Christian nation on earth, and you do see it. If I drive into the mountains, you'll see nuns. There's nunneries. They have huge churches here. You can see it a little bit in Romania. Can feel the Christian aspect to it. But in general, if you look at most Christian countries in the West, it's insane. A man just got charged with a hate crime for removing the head of a devil statue that Satanists had put inside a church. And he took the head off it, and he is being charged with a hate crime. Him! In a Christian country. And you don't talk about Christianity.
Well, no, I don't.
Oh, well, there you go. Christianity has lost all of its merits as a religion. If you do not have strong parameters of what is right and what is wrong, and if you're afraid to say them, go to a Christian and say, is homosexuality allowed? Do you agree with it? And they're going to pussyfoot around the question. They're going to say, well, you people can make their own choices. God loves everyone. The Bible says no. The Quran says no. You're homophobe. Quran says no.
This episode is proudly owned by Simon Cooper, who purchased one of my exclusive NFTs and officially owns this episode for life. Simon Cooper, also known as Damp Sam, has 40 years experience in property and damp. He's on a mission to raise awareness on poor housing and living conditions, and he has opportunities to qualify for the preservation industry. All this and his podcast is at dampsam.com. That's dampsam.com.
I'm not going to be part of a religion or adhere to a religion that doesn't have strict beliefs, because then it's not a religion anymore. If you tolerate everything, you stand for nothing. So there's only Islam left. Now, I'm not going to insult Christians. I believe that there's one God. this theory of mine might get me in trouble with Muslims alone. Muslims also. I don't know if this is just how I view it. I believe there's one God, and I believe the different religions are perhaps different languages to say the same thing. You can say coffee cup in German, you can say coffee cup in English, but it's still a coffee cup. There are different ways to say the same things. But Islam is so much stricter, it's so much more respectable. You can feel it. So if you truly believe in God, I don't see how you could not want to be a Muslim. I don't see how you can feel any pride in being a Christian anymore. And that's why I reverted. Not because I'd always believed in God, but I just found the language that made the most sense to me. And I don't see any other language that makes sense anymore. I feel like it's a very easy choice for anyone who truly believes in God. Mm. And if you don't believe in God, in the world we're currently in, then I don't know what's wrong with you, because God is the only one who can fix this mess. So you better start believing, because you're going to need him. And I guarantee...
But can't you have faith in yourself and your ability?
No.
Why not?
Because we're all human and we're all fallible. And it only takes a judge with a stamp, as I can tell you, to end your capabilities here on earth. We're going to need God to fix this mess, because we're going to need a global awakening of consciousness. We need people to realize they've been lied to from head to toe. We need paradigms to break. And when paradigms break, things often get chaotic and messy, and wars come before a new paradigm is installed.
Isn't that just the rise and fall of empires?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we have to hope that new paradigm being installed is better than the old one. And what we need, once again, is for people to love each other and care about their community and care about their children and care about one another. And if that's not God, tell me what is. We need God more than ever. You can't replace God with anything else. You can't replace it with money. You can't replace it with government. And you also need God to inspire bravery. If you don't believe in God, how can you be brave in the face of assassination? It's only God. If I had to go into the cage and fight a man, and one was an atheist, and one truly believed that Allah had decided that he was going to destroy me, I know who I'd choose to fight. I'd fight the atheist all day long. Mr. Evolution. Cool. I'll fight him. You're going to need faith in God to win this war, because it's only faith in God that's going to make you say, no, I believe in X. I love my family. I love where I live. God wants me to tell the truth and stand up for what is right, despite the fact that I am persecuted for it. We need more God. Why are all the people in charge of the world trying to get rid of God if he's not their enemy? That's the only thing they fear. The only thing they fear is people waking up and saying, no, this is wrong. It is morally wrong. And for that reason, we refuse. They don't want that. No. They want to make everything subjective. Islam, especially, Christianity used to be, it removes the subjectiveness. You know what's right and you know what's wrong. And for anyone who also doesn't believe in God, if these religions are man-made, why do they go against the wills of men? A lot of them. If we're going to make man-made religions, why don't the religions tell us to do all the things we want to do and run around and sin? No, so we need God. And I think that he is our last hope at this point. I think the world is very fundamentally broken. I can't let the Matrix know everything.
There's always going
to
be.
It's all attack vectors. I have to smoke screen because it's all attack vectors. And the largest attack vector for a man will always be women. I don't know if most men understand this, that the easiest way to get a man in any regard is a woman. Because women have basically no OPSEC in general.
Explain no OPSEC, sorry.
They have no operational security. They have no OPSEC. So if my brother and I go somewhere, I know that unless I want people to know I'm there, no one will know I'm there. If we bring either of our girlfriends, sooner or later, if it's the corner of a cup on an Instagram story or...
Or a piece of box.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Do I get that one?
No, that's true. But they knew where I lived anyway. I didn't get raided for pizza. They knew exactly where I was. But women aren't very good at operational security, firstly. Secondly, women are easy to scare, as they should be. So if you need to, your woman can love you with all her heart. But if they want to find out where you are and they kidnap your wife, she's going to tell them.
Yeah.
Of course she is. If the police interview her, she's going to tell them. Of course she is. Women are the attack vector. And I'm talking about this from a law enforcement perspective. I can also talk about it from my previous life. If I had an enemy and I wanted to get hold of him and I couldn't get hold of him or I couldn't find it, we'd just find his chick. She'll tell us. Or you at least watch her. Yeah. She'll give it up. Every single time she'll make a mistake. Because women don't have this combative mentality. And I wouldn't want a woman who does.
Because that's a man.
Because that's a man.
But you don't so, want a man.
Exactly.
You
want a woman. Yeah. So I'm not being misogynistic. I'm saying that the kind of woman I like who's truly feminine, who I'd want to be with, is a primary target. Law enforcement know this too.
What defines sexual consent? You said fucking bring it. You told me to bring it.
Well, it's forever changing, isn't it? I think if we're watching this, I think everyone at home knows what rape is. I think everyone at home knows what an actual rape is and how heinous and disgusting that is. And I'm the first person as a masculine man to say that rapists should face the death penalty. I'll say it myself. A woman regretting consensual sex years later is not rape. I think that's cheapening the idea of rape. I think it's insulting to the women who have genuinely been raped. I think to sit and say that rape can now include a woman having a one-night stand, demanding handbags, not getting handbags, being upset that she can't get handbags, still not calling the police, seeing that man buy another woman a handbag a year and a half later, and then deciding it was rape. I think that is extremely insulting to the unfortunate women who have suffered genuine sex crime. I think it's disgusting. I also think that most women and most men know what sexual consent is. I have daughters. I have a lot of daughters and sons, but I want to make something clear, because one of the things that's used against me most often is people say, I said women bear some responsibility for getting raped, which is not what I said. What I said is that we're adults and we must all bear responsibility for the situations we find ourselves in. If a woman is walking her dog in the park and is raped, that's disgusting, and that's not her fault. What I was talking about was a particular scenario in which a woman will go out with a man, get drunk with a man, spend all night with a man, go to the man's house, continue to drink, have sex with the man, then, years later, decide that it was rape. My argument would be, if you don't want to have sex with a man, do not get drunk with him and do not go lay in his bed. That's my argument. I have daughters, and I would say, do not get drunk with men and lay in their bed if you don't want to have sex with them, ever. Don't do that, because you're going to give the man the impression. Now, I'm not saying the man can rape her. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you're putting yourself in a position where rape is more likely to happen. If I decide to walk through the worst area of town with $1 million in cash, yeah, nobody should rob me. You're right, it's a crime to rob me. But am I making myself a robbery target? Am I making myself easy to rob? It would be irresponsible for me to do such a thing. So I think that the best way to protect women in these scenarios is not to do what the feminists are doing, which is to come along and try and create this ideal world. Well, men should know not to rape. We do. We know not to rape. We also know not to kill. And women should know not to lie. But guess what? People are imperfect and people do bad things. So what you have to do is take personal responsibility and protect yourself against the possibility of these things. I think that the reason sexual consent has now become such a hot topic is, yes, there's bad actors doing bad things, of course, men and women. But truthfully, I think a lot of this is happening because we've removed some of the basic societal norms. A woman wouldn't get drunk with a man and go to a man's house and lay in the man's bed and kiss the man and take all her clothes off and then not want to sleep with a man 4 years ago. So the consent line wasn't as blurred because it was, you're not my husband or you're not my boyfriend. I don't want to go anywhere near you. It was a pretty clear line. So then the line had to be jumped over by a predator. But now the line's all messy because of the immorality of people, male and female. So now it's very difficult. Where do you draw the line? What if she gives consent, but she was drunk? That doesn't count. How is the man supposed to know? Is he supposed to get out a blood alcohol measure and make her beep beep? Oh, sorry, your yes doesn't count. The whole line's messed up because morality is destroyed. If you destroy morality, then now there can't be a line. So I can't answer the question, nobody can. And the law's coming along trying to find the line in all these individual cases, in these huge court cases, trying to find the line where there's no morality at all. I would argue, and I know this is difficult to say, but I'm gonna say it. If my daughter came to me and said I was raped, before, on my way to get my gun, I'd say, tell me the story. And if she said, I met a man and I was dating him for many weeks and I went out with him and I started drinking with him and then I went to his house and we continued to drink and it was a party and then we started kissing and I took all my clothes off and then we started having sex and then I decided I didn't want to have sex anymore. I'm like, I can't truthfully shoot this man in the head anymore. Why did you do all of that? Why didn't you just say no? And I'm talking about my own daughter here. But I don't know if I'm allowed to say this without the world having a mental breakdown, because we live in a world now where nothing is nuanced. You can't make a nuanced point. You can't talk about how complicated a subject is. Everyone wants black and white.
When you said you were a womanizer, but you're a gentleman, to me, a womanizer isn't a gentleman. So what's a womanizer?
So I'm talking about, look, I come from a very bad part of England. You know where I come from, the council estates of Luton.
From me.
Yeah, not fair enough. It's not a good area. And I made money very slowly, I guess. And I've experienced all the different wealth brackets on the way up. And, you know, you give a young man in his mid-20s, or I think I was just past my mid-20s when I first became a millionaire. You know, I'm driving around in a Lamborghini. I'm living in first London, then Slovakia, then Romania. There's lots of pretty girls around. Of course, I met loads of women. That's what you get. It's like giving a chimpanzee a machine gun. Like, it's of course, that's what I was going to do. I live a very different lifestyle now, but what could I have done? I look back on it like, oh, I shouldn't have acted that way. But no one at the time could have told me. Even my future self couldn't go back in time at 26 and say, Tristan, it's Saturday night. Don't go to the club and don't meet any women. I wouldn't have listened. So when I say a womanizer and a gentleman, what I mean is, you know, I met a lot of women, dated a lot of women, took a lot of women to bed, but I never mistreated any woman. So, you know, pick them up in your car, take them out to dinner, buy them flowers, take them home, do this two or three times, you know, and the relationship kind of fades into nothing. It's on to the next one. So, but those women, when contacted by the authorities, had nothing bad to say about me. Nothing, certainly nothing illegal I ever did. They didn't even want to lie for the intention of trying to extort me. Everyone they called said I was a nice guy. So, yeah, I was a womanizer and a gentleman. Never mistreated anybody. Mm. Broke a few hearts, but had mine broken a couple times along the way too. So,
is that not it's life fair. Is called?
Exactly, exactly. No matter what you do, that's what happens.
Yeah. So how does a woman keep a man like Tristan Tate?
Oh, that's incredibly tricky. I didn't actually expect these kind of questions. How does a woman keep a man like Tristan Tate? You know, I'm going to cop out and give a really crappy answer to this, and you're not going to be entertained by it. I don't believe I could describe my perfect woman, because when I look at all of my exes and the women who I was in love with and the women who I did have serious relationships with, they never fit one exact type, whether it be in looks or personality or, you know, their charms, their jobs, education levels. There's no real correlation I can draw. It was just a feeling I got from them. You don't have to be my type to be my type. I can describe the physically perfect woman if I like. I mean, I like tall, kind of slim model types, but, you know, not all of my exes fit into that, and it's not just about looks. I think they just gave me something, a really good feeling I had around them. They brought me peace. They didn't fight with me, they didn't argue with me, they didn't make scandals or blow my phone up or cause arguments over stupid little things. Like, I'm a businessman and you understand what that's like. I'm at war all the time, 24/7. I'm operating at 99% stress level, you know, 365 days a year. So if you want to add 1% stress to my life each day, that's just not doable. No one can operate at 100% stress level. Nobody can. And people, I guess my exes and the girls who I really liked just were very, very nice. Very nice, very kind, very kind of emotionally giving people. I think that's how you keep a man like me.
Mm. Do you think you will ever settle down?
Yeah, I think I will. I look at the trajectory of my life and will I be married in the next couple of years? Who knows? Prenup, obviously, Jesus Christ. But yeah, it's certainly going that direction. I feel like as a man who's lived this kind of strange, eclectic life, you go through these phases and you get bored of certain things. Now there's nothing I want to do less than go out 7 days a week and meet three new women in those 7 days. Like, Jesus, really? All the drinks, all the hangovers, I can't be bothered with that. So
I have been told by people we both mutually know, you still like a good drink.
Oh, I do like a good drink. I love a good drink, but it's very different now. Now it's like, I'm sitting around with my friends, let's drink six bottles of whiskey. It's not like, let's
just
go out.
Six.
Well, it depends. If there's three of us, it's only two bottles per man, you know? It's not that bad. So yeah, I still do love a drink and I built up a tolerance over the years, but it's not part of my recreation in terms of going out and making the kind of parties. It's more sitting around discussing history and politics with my friends, playing chess, playing cards, drinking whiskey. That's when I like a drink now. So it's shifted. And I'm bored of the previous stages of my life. You know, I'm literally bored of them. So settling down, I think, will probably happen. Yeah. Sooner rather than later, but I can't really say anymore because I have no certain answers.
Do you think, like, being with hundreds of women comes from a place of low self-worth?
Thousands, Rob.
Sorry.
Okay.
Cut, edit. Tristan, do you think being with tens of millions of women... do you think it's sometimes trying to fill a void in your own soul or fill up some emptiness that's there?
I've heard that before, and the answer is yes, in some people. Yes, in some people. So when I say I like drinking alcohol with my friends because it enhances our conversations about history and politics and makes the card games more fun, also there are people who use alcohol to fill a hole in their soul. I don't have a hole in my soul. So when I was running around meeting a bunch of beautiful women, I come from a time when I was a nightclub bodyguard in London, one of the doormen, and I'd like see these millionaires with all these beautiful girls and I couldn't talk to them. One, I was at work. Two, like I made £100 a day. This kind of girl probably wasn't interested in hanging out with me. So it didn't come from a point of trying to fill my soul with anything. I just enjoyed doing it. I just enjoyed meeting new women. I enjoyed hanging out with them. It wasn't just the sexual side of things. I enjoyed taking them to dinner, having them on my arm, going to the theater, going to the ballet. It was nice. I wasn't trying to fill a hole in my soul, but I do 100% agree that some people are trying to do that. But same could be said with alcohol. Same could be said with many things. Mm.
Did I hear you say you were glad you went to jail?
Did I say that? Yeah, I probably said that.
So when I say did I know you did because I saw it. Yeah, you did.
Yeah. I think I've said it twice. One, I'm glad I went to jail with Andrew. I'm glad he wasn't sent to jail without me because that would have been a travesty. It's already a travesty of justice as it is, but at least send me with him, you know? Glad I went to jail. Yes. Yes, I'd never been to jail. And I tried to think into the future and look back at my life as a 65, 70-year-old man. Although being in jail at the time bothered me a lot. Even now that I'm out, God knows if they'll send me back. Hopefully not. It doesn't look like it. But I think it was a very interesting chapter of my life. This is certainly, for a three-month period, one of the foundational stories that will be told about me and Andrew in the decades to come. The time that we were thrown in prison unjustly. So even though it was only 3 months of time, yeah, I'm glad I went. It was a test of character. I passed the test of character to myself and to God, to no one else, because obviously no one else was watching. And yeah, I think one day when I write my autobiography, it's going to be a very interesting 3 or 4 chapters. So I'm glad I went through it. I mean, it was January, February, and March of 2023. What would I have done anyway? Went skiing. I can't ski. I just sit in the ski resort drinking whiskey, trying to, well, you know, watch everyone else do the skiing and sit by the fireplace. What would I have really done that could have taught me more than going to jail?
So what were the benefits of going to jail?
Oh, I mean, there are basically no benefits in that regard.
Well, there weren't any luxurious benefits, but there were character benefits.
Yes, it didn't change me, but it confirmed to me all the things I already thought about myself. Now I know them about myself. So,
surely going from thinking about yourself to knowing yourself is fucking powerful.
It is. It absolutely is. Yeah. You know, I'm the kind of guy and I feel like I can handle any situation. I can handle anything. I'm Tristan Tate. And I've been saying this for years. And I've been through some difficult situations in my life. But being picked up from just after Christmas Day in your fancy clothes and you're taken down to a police station. They're like, oh, we're searching your house for human trafficking. I'm like, well, good. There's no one in my house. There's no drugs in my house. Nothing. They searched my house. And it was okay. Then the handcuffs went on. They put me in jail. And they said, okay, you'll be here at least 24 hours. And that went on for 92 days. So it was a mentally tough situation to be in. And yeah, I thought, I'm Tristan Tate. I can handle any situation. Now I'm like, yeah, I can handle any situation. So having thoughts about who I was and confirming who I was, I guess, is the biggest thing I got out of it. Mm.
So I talked quite a lot to Andrew leading up to this.
Okay.
And one thing he said to me was, I'm pissed off with myself, Rob, because there's things I really want to say that I haven't said.
Yeah.
And lawyers, whatever reasons. Is there anything about the case that you haven't said that you can say?
Is there anything I haven't said that I can say? No, there's things I haven't said that I'd really love to say.
But you
I'd
can't
really
say.
Love to say, no, I can't put them out right now.
I Does will that say not this, fucking frustrate you?
A little bit.
Yeah.
But I know that my time is going to come. And one day, everybody, whether they find me guilty on zero evidence and put me in jail or not, as soon as the case is over, the entire world is going to know exactly why this happened.
Why did it happen?
Who set the dogs on me? What the dogs' names were? Like, let's just put it that way.
So you know the dogs' names.
And the handler who let them off the chain.
Right. And that's what you can't say.
Well, it's one of the things I can't say. Yeah. I literally wish I could say it, and yeah. I can't say anything right now. But when the case is over, I won't even have to say anything. Everything is going to be on the table, and everybody will be able to look. And I think everyone's going to be very, very shocked at the process that's led me here. I mean, I was falsely accused originally 1 year and 9 months ago. 1 year and 9 months. I was arrested 1 year and 1 month ago. I'm still under a form of arrest now. I'm still under arrest now. And yeah, the fact that this has lasted so long is the big mystery. That's the big mystery. Everyone's like, well, the people who like me are quite right in saying, if he was guilty of human trafficking, they'd have locked him up and convicted him and put him in jail by now. Because that's what the people who attacked me wanted to do. And the people who hate me are actually wrong in saying, oh, well, it's still going on because they're going to find him guilty eventually. No one is ever, 2 years from initial event, still, there's not even a decision about if there will be a trial or not. That decision hasn't been made. So it's a very long time in my life. And the reason why it took so long is going to be the big wow moment.
Well, because I was just going to ask you, is it taking so long part of the process of what they want to achieve?
Exactly. And how they've done it is going to be the mind-blowing part when everyone's like, oh, wow.
Can I come back to Romania for that moment?
Yeah,
come
sure.
And have another chat with you.
I've been in Romania a while. When this is over, let's meet in Dubai. I'll come to you.
Yeah.
But that's going to be the mind-blowing moment. How it was done, how it was orchestrated to last so long, and who did it. That's going to be the interesting part.
That is the filthiest of cliffhangers.
Yeah. Too bad.
I wouldn't push any harder than that. I've got to push a bit. I've got to do my job.
I appreciate it.
I know you said don't mention his name, but there's something I want to talk about with Harry, Prince Harry, because I'm torn. Here's why I'm torn.
Tell me.
I think throwing your dad under the bus on Oprah is like a cardinal sin.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, how he has allowed someone into his life who's ripping the monarchy apart, cardinal sin. But that fucking guy lost his mum in front of the whole world and had to walk around a public funeral. And the British fucking press have a lot to be held responsible for, and they're not. And all the phone hacking and all the shit that they've done. And I have some fucking sympathy and love for him for what he went through with his mum.
I'll tell you why I don't.
Okay, go.
I am from a part in the world. My dad didn't die until I was 27. I can't imagine what it would have been like to lose your mum when you were 8. How old was he? Young kid.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. But the plethora of problems that I know of friends of mine, I know people who were orphaned. I know people with no parents. I know people whose parents were drug addicts, used to abuse them, beat them. I don't come from a good place. Mm. And all of these people have grown up somehow to be wonderful people still. I'm not saying what happened to Harry was okay. I'm not saying it wasn't tragic. What I'm saying is his life was so privileged and advantaged in many ways, minus some horrible tragedies. I don't accept the excuse of growing up and becoming a shitty person via any tragedy that happened to you in the past. I think that good people are good and bad people are bad. There could be a man who grows up being sexually abused by his uncle, for example, and sexual abuse happens to men all the time. Men don't talk about it. And he might grow up to be a charity worker who fights for kids who are sexually abused. You can have another person who was sexually abused by his uncle, same circumstances, who grows up to sexually abuse other kids. One's a good person, one's a bad person. Trauma in the past is not an excuse for being a shitty person, and I personally won't give Harry that out card.